All right, we're gonna go to item 14, moisture replenishment plan.
All right. For the new commissioners, we do a plan every winter on what we're gonna do for replenishment in the summer. And we present the plan, we present it to the committee last week. But the main thing that you're voting on in your vote is the procurement methods that we use to do everything. Because the code actually allows us to do different procurement methods than other agencies do, because we use Waterman and we set prices, and so we have our own little code section, and what you are approving is the about three pages into the document, the procurement methods.
Page 5.
Yeah. But just to give you a little bit of background, I mean, obviously, there's a pretty good buzz right now on the improvement that we've had in oyster harvest. A big part of that is what the commission has done through the projects to train watermen to do aquaculture. We have a lot more people doing it, along with the advances that we've had in just better brood stock and triploidy. But all that together, you can see the red line there is probably the faster growing line. That's the private production. But at the same time, we've been making steady improvement in public oyster harvest also, when you go back to 2000. And a lot of that came after the Blue Ribbon Oyster Panel. We kind of looked at everything we did, and we came up with some changes in how we would do the management, and we implemented those in 2007, and they've been paying off. And as we get areas that we can expand into with like things like rotating harvest, we do it. But the other thing the Blue Ribbon Oyster Panel recommended in 2007 was that oyster restoration really required about $2.5 million a year to do a good job to keep the harvest improving. And since 2007, we've had years with relatively low funding. We've had years with no funding and years with some funding. But the fact that we had shown all this improvement in recent years led people to begin talking to legislators this summer, and they began a little bit earlier. And the upshot of it is that we got money added into the governor's budget that, of course, it has to get all the way through the legislative process, but if it goes through, it'll be the biggest amount of money that we've ever seen here that came from the state. I mean, we've had years bigger than this, but they were always from the feds where we had strings attached to them on what we had to do, that they had to be sanctuaries or something that we were doing with the federal money. Just to go through the very first, starting with the program, we occasionally do seed oysters. In 2007, one of the Blue Ribbon Oyster Panel recommendations was that we did a cost-benefit analysis of things we do. And generally, we cannot maintain a dollar return for a dollar when we do seed oysters, when we actually pay watermen to go harvest seed, and they move it to a piece on public bottom, and then they harvest it later. And part of that's disease. Part of that is the fact that it's more expensive for us to do it than it would be if they did it privately. And unfortunately, a part of it is that they don't report very well. So it's really, we know the upfront cost of doing seed removal, but we don't get the back end when they don't report. One of the few areas that I know has actually been doing okay is in Nominee, and we propose to do seed there again. And the only reason that I know that it's doing well is because I look at what the boat counts are from law enforcement, and I see how many people are working out there. And I know that they're catching several thousand bushels a year from those seed. And it's the only way seed can get there. We don't ever get a natural set in that river, and for some reason it's an area that the rays seem to leave alone. So the first thing we're proposing is to move 10,000 bushels of seed there from the James River. It's so far up the Potomac that you can actually move James River seed, and they won't die from disease. But it's expensive. It's $8.50 a bushel, so it's much more expensive than doing shell. But we are proposing that much for Nominee. In the other rivers where we have seed, we have a different program that's been working really well, and that's where we started this in Pyeongtaek, and this just shows what the standing stocks look like where we keep the shells up in the Piank Tank, and we allow, based on our stock assessment, people to come and take seed, waterman and private leaseholders, and they pay back to us 2 bushels of shell for every bushel of seed that they take. And it's worked really well, and you're not talking about great quantities. Last year we had about 25,000 bushels. This year you can see that the stock here has gone down a little bit, so we're only proposing 20,000. But the important thing to look at is these are reefs with no harvest, and these are reefs with harvest, and they're basically the same. I mean, when you come to where we are in any given year, we're almost about the same. If anything, harvest areas look a little teeny bit better, but it's hard to claim that. It'll be more expensive for them to work this year in those areas because our shell costs have gone up. So they will be paying $4.10 to us if they don't replant the shells themselves, and we'll replant the shells for them in those areas that they harvest from. So since that one worked well, last year we started doing the same thing in the Great Wicomico. We had pretty much set the Great Wicomico aside in a big experiment with the Corps of Engineers back in 2005, we did restoration throughout the river, and we just left it alone. And this here, these are our areas, and this is the core areas, and you see that they basically got a great set back in 2006, and it's been declining since then. But here, we allowed harvest in 2011, and along with the harvest, we also planted shell, and our area has responded much better than areas that you left alone. And the reason is that it's the culture area. The reason that we've been trying to get money from the General Assembly to keep our areas up is that shells have about a 3 to 4 year half-life. And when we plant shells, you put shells overboard, they grow to market size. Because of disease, I mean, you can see right here, that's markets in this area. Contrary to what the popular press says, disease is still the major impacting factor out there. There's other things too, but disease is still there. It may have eased off a little bit, but it's still the driving force in oyster mortality. And when we put big shells out in restoration and they get a set on them, say you get one spat per shell, if 90% of them die, it means that only 10 shells out of the 100 make a big shell again. So that's what drives our shell budget. The other 90% has started their 3 to 4 year half-life counting down. And unless you go back out and you put shell, and what we did is we put new shell in 2010 and 2011, and what comes after that, new shell, you get spat set because it's better for the larvae to attach to. So it looks like these areas, when we manage them actively, we do better with them than just purely putting shells out and walking away. The industry gets to use the seed that's there, our quota every year. And in the Great Wicomico, because it cost us a little bit more to get shells there because of its location, the people that are in this program, we're going to do 20,000 bushels there again this year, they have to pay a little bit more because their shells cost more. But it's still a very good deal for a leaseholder or a waterman to go buy, to get, harvest these shells himself, put them on his ground, and pay us the $5 than it would be if he had to put shells out in advance somewhere where he doesn't have access to that good a spat set. So it's a good program for everybody. And these are the two areas that we use in the Great Wicomico for taking the seed. We've got a lot of other areas up there, and we just dedicate two of our bigger areas. And when they take the seed off them, we replant them with 2 bushels of shell for every bushel they take. We have one new area that we're advertising this year to try, and that's this area in the Coratomon River. In the Coratomon, if you're familiar with geography, it's above Rappahannock Bridge on the north side. It's an area that it's in one of our harvest areas, rotation areas, but we just never can get market oysters there. And if you look back at some of the old literature and we look at some of our stock assessment, we see spat sets there all the time, and we see good spat sets. And so we're going to see rather if we can possibly turn this area into a seed-producing mm-hmm. area where instead of, depending on if our market, because anoxia kills this reef off at least every other year. And so if we put fresh shells out there every year, maybe they can just take the seed off in the fall, replace it, and we just use it as for that area to have an area that they can get seed from. Won't be as good of a count as in Piantan and Great Wicomico, but it's always a decent count.
What kind of price are you putting on that, Jim?
This year, it's only $2 because there's nothing there. If we can get some guys that will come clean the top off for us, that's how much it costs to put a shell back in at this spot. We're not going to do 2 bushels for one because they're only going to get 150 to 200 count per bushel. This year, to get it started, if they clean it off, then we can go put fresh shell on top of it and then start the program for real next spring.
So it was 205 in the Pianica tank, 550.
No, that's actually 205 a bushel. It's actually 410 in the Pianica tank, 550 in the Great Wicomico, and $2 in the Corcoran.
Okay. Thank you.
And we put notices out there, all including your packet, on each of these, and we publish them, put them on our website, post them, and watermen then apply. If more people apply for them than our 20,000 quota, then we just proportionate to what they ask for. We cut everybody back to get to the 20,000. So, everybody ends up getting some. Nobody gets cut out. But the lion's share what we're doing with either the money that we have, if we stay at 500,000 or any additional that we get up to the 2 million extra, will be for putting shells overboard. Since we have missed a number of years now, a lot of our beds have started to decline pretty rapidly. We do our fall stock assessment. We go out and we measure the shell that's available on every bar. And we have found that even though you would love to have a lot of liters per meter, to maintain good productivity, we need to stay above 5 liters. And that's a very small amount if you think about it's just a little bit more than a quart and a half or so of shell per meter that we can maintain harvest productivity. And when we simply go back in these areas that have 5 and add 1,000 bushels per acre, we can get it back up almost to 10. Because that 1,000 bushels per acre gives us about one shell per, just if you did it evenly, just one shell thick. And I mean, if money was no object, you need much more than that. But money is an object, and so you have to compromise between what keeps the industry going and keeps productivity up. We're not maximizing, but we're staying steadily productive. And we have way more than 1,000 acres now that need shells added, 1,000 bushels per acre. And I just put a bunch of maps in here just showing it. I mean, it's everywhere from the Lower James to the York, Mob Jack, off Winds Island, Rappahannock, Great Wicomico, and Tangier and Pocomoke. Everywhere is scheduled to get some shell. We are raising the price per bushel to the houses from 75 cents a bushel at the pile to $1.50, just to put us in some competitiveness with everybody else. But we're having everybody come down and buy our shells right now, and shells are being sold right now to Maryland for $2.50 on the pile. So we may not get all of them, but it just cannot justify jumping from $75 to $2.50 with the limited amount of funds we have. Because this the rush for shells right now is going to be short-lived. I mean, at some point it's going to play itself out. We have Maryland that's giving grants to people. They have a new private industry. If they get a lease and they apply for a grant, they get for every $10 they invest, they've only got to pay $4 back. So it's artificially letting them pay more for a bushel of shell than we'd be able to because it's not their money. At the same time, we have other restoration groups that are trying to use shell for restoration. We encourage them when we can to use an alternative substrate since most of their work is sanctuaries, but still, again, it's a buzz that's out there on how valuable shells are. and people are kind of sitting on shelves to see who's going to be the highest bidder. But we do have some of the houses that are loyal to us and see that they're getting product back. It's important that they sell to us. But we did have to make the effort to raise the price somewhat, so we didn't look too bad in the face of getting more money. If we don't have, and we won't have enough house shelves for all this, so whatever money we spend on house shelves, the rest of it will go for dredging fossil shells. And we do that, we don't advertise, show these notices here that you'll see in the back of a packet for that, because we put that out for our normal invitation for bid that the state has a process for, because it's a big contract, and we put it out for anybody to bid on it, even though there's really only one machine in the country that can do that kind of work. But that the price for the dredge shell has also gone up over time, as we have not had money, and you get money some years, you don't get money some years, and the one machine we have for working has to keep that machine up to date, even in years that it sits and doesn't work. So, like last year, we had the first time that we had used them in several years, and they had to do a lot of rebuilding of everything that saltwater had ruined over the past 2 or 3 years that it sat still. And so our price per bushel was $3.30. And hopefully this year, with a bigger contract and the fact that we paid for the improving the machine last year, that we'll get it at a lower price and we'll get back down into $2 per bushel. And then it's just a matter of how many acres you can do. So we could do anywhere from probably 600 to 800 of the 1,000 acres that we have that need shells this year with the funds that we have. Any questions on shell planting or anything?
So those are the areas you're going to plant, what you see on the map?
As many of these as we can. And we won't do all in one area. I mean, we'll do some in each area, but we likely won't be able to get all the polygons unless
you also have some on the Eastern Shore, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're also proposing something on the Eastern Shore.
Yeah, we also, I mean, our Eastern Shore project is, we can't use these sorts of big barges on the Eastern Shore, and we have a little program over there with one contractor that actually, there are fossil shell deposits on the Eastern Shore that are right on the surface.
Right.
They wash in from the ocean, and we're doing those too.
So you do have some on the seaside then?
Yes, we do have some on the seaside too, yeah. $100,000 we have for that. Have a little bit of money in there for Cano's Raise to keep that program going. It's actually, they found a buyer, or a couple of countries now, they're interested in buying whole fish, which we hope that one plays out, and try to keep a little bit of money to pay watermen to catch those fish for them. And then the final part is that we'll continue with the Blue Crab Disaster Program. We started in 2009 in Virginia doing training watermen. We've trained watermen to use both cage culture as well as spat on shell. And just point out this one to show you that this is spat on shell, but the main thing is look at the numbers. You know, where we were with one hatchery in 2005, we now have 8 hatcheries, commercial hatcheries in the state. Been a really good growth industry. It's what's driving our private production that's going up. Last year in our program, we did, you know, one well over a billion, 1.6 billion of either people that we had trained or people that we were paying for, and over 200 million individual oysters got put over from that, which comes out to about 25,000 bushels of seed. And these guys are often getting, usually always get one bushel back of markets per bushel. Usually they're getting two and three. So it's the growth that we're seeing in the industry through spat on shell. The reason it's so attractive to watermen is that it's relatively simple. You know, they put the shells in bags, they put eyed larvae on them, and they put them on these tanks, and people can share tanks. And then they just load them in their boats, just like they're used to working with seed oysters. They're in bags and put them overboard, and they can go right back and catch them with their dredges that they're used to working with. So this is even, we're still shucking about, using about 500 million bushels a year, and 500,000 bushels a year. 10% or less is actually half shell. So what we need for the industry to grow and for the aquaculture to grow is the production for that for the shucking houses. And the shucking houses, I mean, we were up to 236 or 238 last year, so that means we still have another 262 million bushels that we can go up to that's just sitting there available for people to sell to if we can produce it. The money has kind of dwindled down in this program, so we only have about $300,000 for new people, and so that's taking about 19 more people into the spattle and shell program this year. So, any questions?
Jim, what percentage of shells are planted on sanctuaries versus harvestable grounds?
For us, if we're using federal money, it's 100% of their money goes on it. But for our money in this situation, we don't distinguish between a bar, when we do stock assessment, that needs shells between a sanctuary or harvest area. It's whenever it gets to that 5 liters of shell, whatever it happens to come up to, we put shell back on it at 1,000 bushels per acre. So because we've gotten a little bit of money to do sanctuaries the past couple of years, this year the sanctuaries, there was very few sanctuaries that fell into the money that they were exploring this year, but there are a couple. But it's strictly based on how many shell we see there. Because, you know, we know sanctuaries are important, it's just that they're not the only thing we should be doing.
Jim, the slides you showed us of the potential areas, how many of those are sanctuaries versus harvest areas?
Well, those were all the areas, but I'd have to look back at them, but not many. I think there's maybe one area here in the Rappahannock. And all these are in a lot of these are in rotation areas, so they're
right.
They're two out of 3 year sanctuary. But I think that's the only one that fell in. There's one in the Rappahannock fell in this year. Mm-hmm. It's not that we didn't select for that. It just that's right. The way they fell because we've been getting some federal money to take care of the sanctuaries, and we hadn't been getting money to take care of the harvest areas.
Right. Mr. Plumlee, you had a question.
I don't take any issue with the layout of the funding, but it's based on receiving this additional $2 million as projected. But if it's not received, is there another plan that needs to come back before us, or is this going to be in some priority?
It'll just be scaled down. I mean, it'll be significantly scaled down to the fact if we would only get the original amount of $500,000, and by the time we bought the house shells, probably what we would have to do is do nothing but house shells this year, sit on the additional money which we're allowed to carry forward, and then add to whatever we got next year, because we could not entice a shell dredger to come here for a couple hundred thousand. If we don't get up to $1 million, they can't mobilize to do what they need with tugs and this big dredge and everything that we have. So we would just do what we could this year and hold the money for the next year and add to what we had.
Just to your point a little bit, just let me say how pleased I am with the governor and Secretary Domenech for including $2.5 million in VMRC's in the governor's budget for us for oyster restoration. This is the single largest allocation of general funds for oyster restoration in the history of the agency. You know, the Blue Ribbon Oyster Panel report goes back many years and identified sort of a minimal level of what was needed. And we finally have an administration who's read that report and understands it and is willing to put its money where its mouth is. I mean, they finally understand the value of the oyster industry and what it brings to Virginia. I haven't spoken to anyone in the General Assembly who's opposed to this item in the governor's budget. I'm hearing nothing but excitement about it and sort of comments of it's about time and this is a good thing and we hope it continues. So I'm very, very optimistic I can tell you a month ago I was not very optimistic. In fact, I was pessimistic. But it's happened, and you know, it couldn't have come at a better time.
There's no federal money right now. So if we didn't have this, there would be nothing going on.
Gotcha.
Any other questions for Dr. Wesson?
Well, one, just how will you harvest those shells on the seaside? That big machine's not going to come, will that come over from the James River?
No, we have, Mike
Steelman? Yeah.
It's just a conventional dredge.
Okay.
The shells just come right to the surface. They roll in from up in front of Wreck Island.
Right.
And we just harvest them and move them from
okay.
there. But, I mean, that's... It's like an ant doing projects over there compared to a bulldozer. You know, it's his barge carries 1,000.
Right.
These big barges carry 40,000 or 50,000 per.
I can see that looks a lot quite so a bit bigger than what he's got pulled up.
And so obviously you can't do it as cheaply in that situation.
Thank you.
All right, we're looking for a motion.
So moved.
To approve the plan as well as the procurement procedures.
Second.
Mr. Tankard, seconded by Mr. Plumlee. Comments on the motion? Mr. Robbins.
Mr. Chairman, since I participate in the program, I will not be voting on the motion.
So noted. Any comments on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carries. Mr. Robbins abstains.
And then we have one item in blue that came in that had a request for us to extend the James River hand scrape season that will go out at the end of this month. It's the end of the third month. Come from industry. This is the standing stock situation in the fall. This is pre-harvest, which this is pre-harvest 2011, pre-harvest 2012. Last year there was a request to extend the season, and we did not. And actually, the stocks have declined from a starting spot from where they were last year. This has been a very unusual year for the industry in that there were a lot of oysters in Virginia and a lot of oysters in Maryland, which to the point that with all their H-2B issues for their shuckers, a lot of them have downsized to the point that they have shuckers that accommodate the normal amount they get. So when they kind of work together on big orders, but it was to the point there were enough oysters around in Chesapeake Bay that many of the shucking houses were only buying from oysters on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. And then it would take them until the following Monday to get rid of what they had. But it is concerning in the James River because we have worked on this area really hard. We've got a really big poaching problem in this river that we're trying to address on these areas. So they get worked whether it's open or closed. And it's not a rotation. We've not been able to – this year we may have shells for the first time where we can actually consider moving the James into a rotation that we've not been able to do because it's really hard just to put an area into rotation. We've not done any restoration there because you're pretty much just rotating the little bit of wild stuff that happens to be there without you doing anything, and it just doesn't seem to be fair to cut their harvest so dramatically if you're not going to do something to improve their harvest because getting through those first couple of years of the rotation is hard in these areas unless you've got some areas that are coming with new, better spat set. It would be a hard recommendation to extend this further after 3 months of harvest here.
Questions, Mr. Palmer?
Jim, I have a question for you, if I may. Do you have any idea if the boat's still catching a lemon in James River or not? How bad has it fallen off?
It's not fallen off horribly. We are seeing poaching increase going across the dredge line into the line they're not supposed to be, which is indicative of they wouldn't be in the area they should be in, out of the area they should be in if it was good.
Right, I understand.
But when I looked through the cards this morning, and I'm assuming that they're two people rigs, but they could be three, but I was seeing mostly 12s, tens, thirteens, very rarely saw a 16.
Okay.
And I'm assuming that's two people with eight, not three.
Mm-hmm.
So they're maybe 60% of their limit. And, you know, in the first week or two or month, they were catching that by 10 o'clock. Now that's 2 o'clock. They're staying the whole day to catch that amount.
Mr. Shanker.
The poaching issue, one of the fellows who's very knowledgeable over on my side there out of Oyster and Cape Charles, mainly out of Oyster, he said he didn't make it over James River. He said that the poaching was so bad during the summer.
Yeah, a lot of guys, when they went out to places that they had left last winter, where they knew they had small orchards, there was nothing.
Right. Can we do anything about that?
We're working on some stuff for it. I mean, it's a toughie.
Warner, do you want to comment on that? Enforcement in the James?
Law enforcement was made aware of some poaching issues we had in the James River, and we beefed up our patrols. Some of the individuals were caught. Some of them are going through the court process now. They were tried in general district court, found guilty, and they've appealed their convictions to the circuit court. And we're waiting on the court to act on that. We've also had some go to circuit court, and they were dismissed. And
what was the basis for the dismissal?
Didn't like the way the reg was written, supposedly. I haven't got an official report on it yet, but I'll be getting one.
If they have court reporters go to that, maybe I can look at what the judges are saying and we can figure out a way to deal with it. It'd be helpful. We need all the help we can get. It's just an ongoing battle.
It is.
We had special challenges
that last summer in the James River, especially for the poaching issue. And we were successful on some of it.
I understand from, again, Waterman, they seem to have a very elaborate spotting system that they use to make sure they know you're there.
They have somebody watching on land and watching for our vessels. They know where we tie our vessels up, and they go to see if they're in port or out.
I was surprised at the effort that went into the poaching system.
The cell phone makes our life real difficult.
Well, keep it up as best you can. I think at some point maybe you can break it.
Let me just note that the commission has license revocation authority.
Yes, sir.
That perhaps we should make more use of.
You will probably start seeing some repeat offenders coming through because they're quite getting to be some now.
Well, I would urge you to get them to us as soon as you can.
Yes, sir.
Anything else? Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you, Jim.
More questions on that?
Is there any? Well, I guess the question is, does the commission want to take any action on this request for a two-week extension?
And they're actually asking for it in March, because I told them that we really had no reason to do an emergency. So they're asking, if you're going to consider it, to have a public hearing in February.
I don't hear any requests from the commission members. So we'll move on.